Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett. Welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. I'm here today with John Krueger. John, how's it going?
It's going well, Adam. How are you?
Good, doing good. You and I were just having a conversation, and I did one of those, hey, let's stop and record it. And so let's pick up where we were at there, what we were talking about.
Yeah, I brought it up because, for one thing, I'm very interested in your experience. You know, my 30-plus years in industry have all been automotive at the Tier 1 supplier level. So I'd be interested in your reflections on this topic, this concept, because I know you touch many other industries. So what I was saying, that the mantra in, you know, the automotive supplier industry in terms of validating product and reliability, is it used to be that it was a no-no to have our products fail in our customers' hands. It was always one of these things where we wanted to completely validate our product, understand our failure modes. You know, if we have to fix them, we will, and then revalidate. Where anymore, the development cycles in the industry are so compressed that now we basically have to make our customers our partners in this process. And we actually welcome failures in our customers' hands because, you know, the best exposure our products can get are on the customers' vehicles. You know, we can only replicate environments and usage conditions in the lab so much. So the best exposures are in our customers' hands. And if you treat them as partners, then, you know, it's not such that negative stigma to get a failure in their hands. It's really just two partners learning a failure mode and improving a product.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, with the way things have been compressed, and I think the trick there is the communication in advance and the agreement of that being a part that role. I have a saying that, you know, if you don't do a reliability program, you're effectively enlisting your customers to be part of your reliability team, and they generally hate that, and they're bad at it. You know, they don't report back stuff very well. And, you know, I'm saying that in the sense of they're unknowing to the fact that you are, you know, releasing product that you're kind of expecting to get field failure data back from. So on the other side, as you're describing, taking the fact that you're so compressed that as a supplier, they integrate it into a higher level product and they're going to be doing testing. Yeah, that's, it's definitely a win-win, right? It's significantly advantageous because you get to take out a lot of the work you have to do with us, you know, estimating use in environment conditions, because you're obviously a step much closer to it. They can simulate that much better or actually, actually replicate how their product will be used. So that saves you a lot, and you're saving a lot on test fixture, test time. You're effectively using their product as a test fixture in some senses, right?
Oh, for sure. Our customers, you know, in the auto industry, there's always a pilot vehicle stage, right? So they're always testing. You know, we're not talking about validation in production.
No.
I don't think anybody's very fond of that concept, but. Yeah, there's always some pilot vehicles that are running, and they're obviously the closest thing you can come to end-use conditions in terms of not just the environments, temperature, vibration, and usage profiles, but also the interfaces that, you know, because we sell components to vehicles, so all the electronic interfaces and mechanical interfaces are all there. And all the interactions of all these environments are there as well.
Yeah. So I guess, but that doesn't mean the pressure's off, right? Because if they are having a lot of their tier one suppliers integrate, you know, these components to their trial vehicle, you don't want to be the one that keeps stopping the testing with your issues.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you could take this too far, and you certainly don't put product on pilot vehicles that hasn't gone through some level of validation.
Yeah.
You know, we have what we call design validation and product validation, and the product validation is a much more mature state where you've got product off of production qualified tools. So. Yeah, so even though, you know, I describe a situation where we're partnered with our customer and we're learning failure modes on their vehicles, it's still a product that has some level of validation maturity.
Yep. Great. All right. Well, to our listeners, we're going to take a moment and hear a word from our sponsorship, and we'll be right back.
Kirk Gray here. We want you to know that my company, Accelerated Reliability Solutions, is ready to support you with experienced leadership, guidance, and training to rapidly develop reliable, robust, and mature electronics at market introduction. To get started, go to accendoreliability.com/go/accelerated.
So, John, when you considered, let's say, going back to whatever time period where you felt that you were trying to deliver a fully mature product to your customer, you know, you had a reliability program plan that had a lot of different, you know, reliability test and analysis tools. You had, you know, DFMEA, you had, you know, stress margin testing, you had reliability growth, all these things. And then you began to, because of, you know, your compressed time frame, engage, as you're saying, to, you know, engage with your customer to where you're openly sharing your testing program, where you're telling them, you know, we have this to about a beta stage, but let's integrate into your product and finish our testing and maturing. How did your reliability program plan change for the phases that were still in-house for you? What got cut? Like, did reliability growth was clearly cut out, and that was a part of what they're running at a higher level, or did you still do a kind of reliability growth program?
No, I think really we ended up, it's not that we cut anything out of it. It's just that we compressed it, for one thing. So we did everything in a more compressed state before we brought in the customer. But I think the other the biggest impact, though, is I think we have a more reliable product at the end of this, right? Because back in the old days, if you didn't have any customer involvement in your validation process until, you know, at the very latest stages, then quite often you're learning about failure modes with very little time to react. So you're going into production with, you know, production and tool changes on the fly and that sort of thing. So I think that the net result then is that our quality levels have improved and our reliability levels have improved. Development cycles have been compressed.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's interesting, I just in listening to you, is realizing is that now they are also a part of your decisions with regard to, schedule and reliability or features. Because historically, as you were saying, where there was kind of this very firm delineation, if you found an issue in your reliability testing, the question would be in-house is, do we tell them we can't give it to them in time, or do we risk giving them, you know, it at this stage where we haven't addressed this area we're concerned about, right? And they're not privy to the fact that you're making that decision. They just get the product and you're just crossing your fingers that you felt uncomfortable with something. Whereas now they're kind of a part of that process, you know, and you kind of can find that balance very much in line with their balance, right? You know, where they say, oh, no, you know, we'd much rather you take the time to fix this, you know. Or they might be like, nope, it's okay. We can let that continue to mature as we go forward. So, I mean, they're kind of a part of that now, right?
Yeah, and I use the word partners, and they really are. And we're finding that our customers more and more are very receptive to this. In fact, we haven't gotten incredibly mature in this yet, but we're starting to develop contract language where we actually, try to develop written contracts with our customers that sort of describe this relationship, mm-hmm. this partnership that we're having.
Yeah.
And that's really beneficial to both parties. And I think they're very receptive to the openness, and that the openness works both ways, right? We want, when you're undertaking one of these kind of programs, you're getting parts back from your customer in a timely manner, and you're getting all the data. How is the product being used when it failed, and that sort of thing. But on the same token, we owe our customers pretty quick feedback on what we're finding. What are the failure modes we're finding, and what's, you know, statistically, what are we learning from our product? And so we owe that to our customers at the same time. So it works both ways.
Yeah. Yeah, and there must be some relief to that too, because when there is a hard delimitation between your program and what you're delivering to them, you know, even the most open and honest, you know, supplier, there is that, you know, kind of you construct what you're going to present to them, right? Whereas, you know, which still kind of creates this, you know, this interface with the customer where you are putting on a certain, you know, kind of, it's the same reason why you show up in a business suit instead of your ripped jeans, right? You know, you're still a perception. Whereas here, that's just gone. I mean, they're the ones who are actually handing you all your dirty laundry, right? Like they're holding the laundry basket. It failed in their hand. They're giving you the data. Like there's no, you know, you're already, everybody's in their pajamas. It's just, there's no.
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not guarded is what you're describing. And that's, and there's different levels of that. I mean, we haven't matured to that level with every customer and every program, but we're certainly focusing on that with certain highlighted programs, especially the ones that are new technologies and new applications of existing technologies and that sort of thing. We sort of highlight those programs and say, all right, on these programs, we're going to go out and try to develop some contractual language. We're going to try to pull the customer in early, and those tend to go very well.
So it sounds like in the way you're describing this, that, you know, this started from this need to compress product development cycle. So that's like, ugh, you know, something's going to go wrong. And in the end, what came out of it was another significant advancement and benefit. Like, I haven't heard you describe anything that's really a downside of where you're saying, oh, I wish we could go back to ways before, because now it sounds like it's faster, it's more effective, you know, it's a better, more mature product comes out of it. There's a stronger relationship between you and, you know, and your customer, which is great, because I mean, you want to continue to enforce that. So is that really how it is? Is it really better all the way around?
You know, I really think it is. And, you know, it's interesting that you point that out, because, you know, if I think back about where we started and, you know, thou shalt not have failures in your customers' hands, that was a very strongly held mantra 15, 20 years ago. And to get to where we are now, you know, like I said, we're not there with every customer on every program. But when we do get involved in these kinds of projects with customers, it's very well received on both ends.
That's interesting. You know, you're making me think of another, you know, we were talking in a previous conversation we had, you know, about the different industries and different balances between reliability, time to market, and all that, and how they, you know, they make a choice that fits their industry. And one that I've seen that is, I definitely consider one of an extreme on an extreme end, but it also, interestingly enough, now connects with this conversation, and it's in the home. It's a customer I have that's in home appliances, and I have never seen a quicker closed loop feedback of customer satisfaction for a new product than in this industry. It absolutely blows me away. They will release a new product, and I'm talking about like a simple appliance anybody would buy for their kitchen, let's say. Mm-hmm. They will release a new product and it goes out in an insane amount of volume, you know, like Amazon or QVC, or we're talking like they go from selling none to the next day selling millions. And the executives will look at the feedback online, you know, the reviews and just customer feedback, and immediately summarize it and hand it down to the engineers. We're talking like a 24 hours after release. And there will be groups of engineers that will actually reach out to these customers if they can locate them to get their feedback directly and immediately begin incorporating that, you know, into maturing the product, or if it's more feature add to, you know, the next generation product. And so what's kind of interesting is I'm realizing in talking with you that that's more of an informal version of partnership, that, you know, where you're describing you have this one very high volume, you know, customer, and you make this very formal, you know, arrangement. And it's even, I see an example of it that's an informal version of it where you don't even realize that you're being engaged in it, but that's how you're engaged by them if you are expressing dissatisfaction. You know, that they're effectively acknowledging the value of your opinion. And I was really surprised by that.
So what you described, though, is it's getting feedback on productive parts, right? Parts that are being sold to end customers and getting quick feedback on that data set.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not during the product development process. This is totally, you know, not planned. And you are a customer that went and bought this at Walmart or you bought it on Amazon. But you aren't just – they aren't just they've taken it a step further. You aren't just complaining and they say thank you for the complaint, or you respond and they say, well, we're sorry to hear that. Here's a new one. They're saying, tell us more about what you've observed. You know, you're getting pulled into the team a little bit, you know, which I think that the interesting thing is that creates, as you're describing, this very positive relationship where historically it'd be a very negative thing where a customer might be like, holy cow, they really care. They really are listening to what I'm saying. You know, this is something that they really – and then you're like, I'm going to buy their next generation product, you know. So.
Well, it's twofold, right? It's they really care, but it's also – I mean, there's a lot of value in getting product in customers' hands and finding out how they perform, right? So it's the you know, good reputation you're earning, but it's also, man, we're getting some really good data and we're going to improve our product in a pretty short period of time.
Oh, yeah. That is a huge tragedy I see with the I have a whole list of things I call tragedies in the reliability industry. But this one is it's so funny that transition from generating data in-house to data being available in the field, and how many people don't take advantage of the insane return on investment of actual customer field data. You know, there's such a bane of a reliability program is, you know, getting enough samples and having enough time to generate a lot of data, like a reliability growth program. And it's just so painful with how little data you get and how slow it comes. And then there's this, you know, everything is leading up to this moment of product release. Product release happens, and at that point, you have all these really good systems in place for collecting and monitoring data, root cause analysis, measuring what's going on. And you start this high volume production, and so a tremendous amount of data is now available. And they turn off all these programs, you know. So they'll turn off the reliability growth program, where you finally have this fire hose of data that you could be just doing a little bit of effort to get from the field, you know, a little bit more of a mechanism to do, and you'd be able to finally really measure what's going on and make statistical confidence statements and see how they're growing. And that's right when they turn the lights off. I'm like, oh my God, why? It's free almost, you know.
Adam, I'm with you. There's nothing, there's very little that's more valuable to us than products that have seen exposure in our customers' hands, whether it's on pilot vehicles in the development stage or if it's coming back during the warranty period or even beyond that. But there's very little that has as much value to us as that.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is that the amount of work that goes into figuring out how to design a test, you know, it's so hard and so tricky, because at the end of the day, you're making statements from test results that have a pretty long list of assumptions that went into the test conditions, you know, and you know that they can't match what's really happening. You know, you're saying, okay, this combination of thermal or vibration, or we think this is happening or that's happening. And it's all these assumptions and estimations. And then you finally get the real life condition where you know there's no assumptions. That's it. That's the case. You know, that's how it gets used. So it's even a more pure form of data. You know, it's much purer in the sense it's not based on a set of assumptions. That just adds to the tragedy.
I'm with you. You're preaching to the choir.
I know. It's like, it's so funny. It's like, and I just see it over and over again. And it's because the reason why it happens is in so many product development cycles, the team really gets disbanded almost after product release. And certain parts of them jump onto a new product development. It might even be a different, you know, type of product within the company, or it's the next generation. A lot of the roles get handed over to the people who are ready to take it in quality and manufacturing, and they start dealing with field issues. And it's, you know, there's almost this like done and they're gone. So, you know, and it just all gets lost. And it would help them so much, even not even just with that product, but the next generation, of course, right? Learning and not waiting. Because usually the way they do find out the information is when in the field something spikes, right?
Right.
And then they start trying to learn about it. But the unfortunate thing is the information was there all along, you know, just waiting to be harvested. So, yeah. It's interesting. Wow, it's good. Well, that was a great conversation. I really liked that. That was very good.
Yeah, well, good.
Good. Well, thank you for taking the time to, talk to me, John, and to our listeners. Please feel free to comment. We'd love to hear your input on this. And we look forward to talking to you next time. Thanks, John.
Enjoyed it, Adam. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.